You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Wednesday morning. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Ashley Winch from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, June 18th, episode 3715, brought to you by Stateline Tech and Poseidon Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Hello, Horse World. It's Wednesday, the day you start daydreaming of a weekend with your horses. We'll help you get there with more silly horse talk on Horses in the Morning.
That's right. We do have a fun show planned for you today. Julia from Saddle Fit for Life is going to join us to tell us about the things you should know about saddle fit. It's one of the most confusing topics out there. So we thought we'd chat about that. I saw some recent conversations about that on Facebook, too. We have Dr. Janice is going to join us. She's our friend from Wilson College in Pennsylvania, and she's going to talk about managing the summer heat with your horses. And it's supposed to be hot all over the country. My brother lives in Connecticut. He's supposed to hit 100.
I mean, oh, my God.
Connecticut. I mean, we're supposed to have a real feel here of 105 to 110 the next 5 days. So, yeah, it's fun. And because Jamie's not here and she does the weird news and I don't have access to it and she's better at doing it than me, I thought with the world being the way it is today and the country being the way it is today, I would bring you some good news stories. So we're going to do, instead of weird news, we're going to do some good news at the end of the show today. There'll be no post-show today. Jamie is traveling. She was supposed to be here today, but she couldn't get flights tomorrow to go out to the movement at Monty Roberts' place at Flag Is Up Farm in California. So she had to get a flight this morning because that's the only one she could get. So I think what's happening is there's not more people flying. There's less flights now. They're cutting back the number of flights because less people are flying. Mm-hmm. I saw, you know, today the Southwest is cutting back and JetBlue's cutting back on flights. So yeah, I think she, you know, she usually goes standby because she can get the flights for free.
But sure.
That's getting hard too. So she had to fly out today. But thank you, Ashley, for filling in at the last minute. I texted you last night late and thankfully, you weren't busy this morning and you could do it with me.
I had to move a couple things around, but I'll do anything for you, Glennie.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So on Monday, we had June Evers on, one of my old friends in the retail world, and she had her new book on how to draw horses, and I said I would give it away to the 10th person to email me, and apparently a lot of you want to learn how to draw horses. The 10th email was Peggy Riley, so congratulations, Peggy.
Yay!
I'll get that book out to you as soon as we get over to the post office. So, and she also had other goodies in there, cards and stickers and stuff, so I'll put it all in there for you. And guess what arrived here yesterday, Ashley?
Do I get any hint at all?
It's something that we had that broke after using it for...
Oh, then I think I know what it is.
I'm so excited. It's like Christmas.
I think it has to do with horse poop.
It does, yes. The Flex and Forks have arrived yesterday. I haven't opened the box yet. I'm going to do an unboxing today because it has been 13 years since we got our first ones.
You know, so, I think so that excited. You need to go get a bottle of Prosecco and break it on the box like how you bless a ship before it goes in the water.
Yeah, I'm not going to waste the Prosecco on that. Don't.
Well, no, you just pour a little bit out and then you're like, okay, the rest is for me.
So we're very excited to open a box today because it has been so long since we had to get new ones. If you missed that episode, we have had our Flex and Forks, which are the longest lasting manure forks in history, for 13 years, Jamie and I. We got them when they first started advertising with us 13 years ago. And they've lasted. And the only thing that killed it is Jennifer ran it over with the truck. That's the only
thing.
Well,
what did you do
it.
To make her mad, Glenn?
You know, it was inevitable. We had it for 13 years and it didn't get run over sooner, to be honest. And then the other one, apparently, I ran over with something and it finally broke the head. We have never even replaced the heads on these. So,
which is insane.
I know.
I mean, listeners, I know you guys are going through pitchforks three times a year.
Yep.
You know?
But it's going to be so nice to have a clean, you know, like fresh-smelling new pitchfork again because it's been so long.
The things that horse people get excited for. Like, we have... We have serious issues.
Yeah, we do. I'll tell you what did happen was the handle started to splinter a little, the fiberglass handle, because mm-hmm. it's sold, you know, dry rotted from being here in Florida. So we wrapped it and, you know, and we kept wrapping it. So we've had it wrapped. So it'd have a new handle again. It's going to be so nice. So I'll do a little unboxing and post it on Facebook. I'm just so excited about our new manure forks. And this is a horse husband excited about manure forks. So that tells you something.
Really?
All right, let's do some daily winnies. I just noticed that who our auditor birthday is today.
I was waiting for
I just
you
noticed.
To put
I hadn't
that
noticed
together.
That before. It's Peggy Riley who just won the book. So happy birthday, Peggy.
What a treat.
Yeah. And then also there's somebody else that has a birthday tomorrow.
There sure is.
Yes. Happy birthday, Ashley.
Thank you.
She's 29.
I love
again.
My birthday. Yeah. I'm so 29. You're funny.
Now, Ian has off tomorrow because it's Juneteenth Day. So you're doing anything for your birthday?
Well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and include that in my daily Winnie.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
So my dear sweet husband, I knew he was going to do some kind of adventure. And I was really thinking we were going to do a hot air balloon ride because we live in Albuquerque. I want to do it so bad before we move. And he, bless this man, cannot keep a secret. Like, he's one of those, if he orders a gift early, I get to open it early.
Can I stop you right there?
Oh, yeah.
This is bad for a guy whose job is keeping secrets.
You know what he said this morning? He said, I'm going to start telling all my nuclear secrets to Levi because he can't talk yet.
Poor guy bursting at the seams.
So he's like, okay, well, do you want to know what we're doing for your birthday? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, he's like, you got to guess. And so I guessed hot air balloon. He said, no, I have a plan for that. So it's in the future. I just don't know when. Maybe when you and Jen come.
Yeah. We'll that'd be fun.
Well, you could come too.
Yeah. You know what? I like flying. I do, but hot air balloon does that one. I think what happened is I went in a World War II or Vietnam era helicopter, the ones where the doors are open and you're sitting pointed out.
Yep.
And it had the Vietnam era lap belt and
nothing to hold on to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that terrified me of having anything that was open looking out straight down at the ground. So I think I'll let you go. But anyway, what are you doing tomorrow?
So Zach very sweetly booked us a trail ride. And
wow, that's
we live
horse
at the base. It is. And he loves a trail ride, too. So I'm very lucky that he enjoys horsing around with me from time to time. And we live at the base of the Sandia Mountains and where this trail will take us to the crest. So we'll be able to see the entire city across the valley. Oh, wow. I will be sure to post pictures. It should be absolutely breathtaking.
Yay, look at him gaining horse husband points, serious horse husband points.
He's pretty well trained. We've been at this for a while and nothing makes me happier than riding. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow. Tonight, we're going out to my favorite restaurant for dinner and
sushi.
It's called Campo at Los Poblanos and it's a farm to table, organic, very like chef's table kind of vibe. Oh, wow. And it's beautiful. And then I asked for my gift, because I didn't know this whole trail ride thing was happening. I said, this year, I don't want anything because I don't need anything. So I'm getting my house deep cleaned on Saturday.
There you go. That's a perfect gift too.
It's awesome.
Another
so
perfect
lots
gift.
Of fun ahead for me.
There you go. Well, happy birthday, my friend.
Thanks, G.
Well, there's a couple events going on, isn't there, right now?
There sure is. And, you know, I'm so glad we're talking about this. I saw this in my algorithm and the Pony Express Re-Ride is currently happening. And that, of course, is honoring the original Pony Express, which most of us remember, that connected Missouri to California. And during the Re-Ride, these participants travel on horseback, mirroring the same journeys undertaken by riders in the 1860s. I'm sure they have cell phones, though, which makes it a little bit, and like probably less dysentery,
deodorant.
You know, like there's some changes.
And deodorant.
And deodorant. <Yeah. laughs> Oh my gosh. Gross. So this re-ride involves riders with a specialized saddlebag, and they're carrying commemorative letters, and the distance is nearly 2,000 miles.
Yeah, you
would spanning eight states.
You don't think about, you know, between Missouri and California being 2,000 miles, but, you know.
Listen, I lived in Missouri. It's in the middle of nowhere.
And they have hundreds of riders doing this. I mean, there's a lot to take part.
There's tons. And it runs over 24 hours a day for 10 days until the mail reaches its destination. So it's super exciting.
We've had them on in the past, the people from St. Joseph, Missouri, where it ends. And we've had them on in the past because there's a big party the day it ends. It's going to be Saturday, June 21st this year at 7:30 p.m. The last rider will come in. And that's where they have the museum for the Pony Express. And they have a big party in town. It's a big festive thing that happens. And we've had them on in the past. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It's something that we talk about every year. And they're still out there doing it.
Well, and we love horse history, so it's just a little bit of horse history for your morning.
And for our UK listeners, of course, a big event's going on over there right now. It's the Royal Ascot. It's the races over there at the Royal Ascot. They get 300,000 people every year for this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it happens over a number of days. Of course, they have, like, the Gold Cup Day where they get 70,000 to 80,000. Apparently, the track can accommodate 80,000. This is the one that's known for a couple of things. One is everybody's dressed to the hilt. I mean, they're all dressed up and they're drinking heavily. Those two things happen over there.
Oh my gosh. Why aren't I there?
I know. And then, of course, you see the picture, the people drinking heavily and what they get into at the races. But it's a big deal. There's almost 7,000 people work there during this. I have some statistics on food and drink. You want to hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So during the five, you know, so Jamie's not here, so I'm not talking anything about the horses or the races. During the 5 days, attendees will consume 65,000 bottles of champagne, 100,000 bottles of wine. 100,000.
Oh, my gosh.
26,000 jugs of Pimm's. Have you ever had Pimm's?
Oh, yeah. I love a Pimm's cup.
I've never tried it.
Oh, you'd like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little sweet. You would like it.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to try it next time we're over there. In terms of food, 220,000 tea cakes. Of course, you know, afternoon tea. So 220,000 of those.
Well, and each of those things are so tiny. I know. Just
yeah, they're like bite-sized. Yeah. 220,000 finger sandwiches. 110,000 buttermilk scones. They love their scones. They will eat 3,000 fresh lobsters, 7,300 Angus steaks, 6,000 rumps of English lamb. It's a lot of sheep.
I'm starving now, Glenn. I did not have breakfast yet.
For this. they have 40 professional kitchens that are overseen by Michelin star chefs. I mean, this is quite an event. It would be fun to go see sometime.
I mean, or it'd be cool if they did like a Top Chef kind of behind the scenes thing on it. Would be really cool.
YouTube, I guarantee you have something on the food.
Oh, I want to go find that.
Yeah,
that
we need
sounds
to look
cool.
That up. The food of Royal Ascot. So yeah, wanted to mention that. Sounds like a lot of fun going on over there. That's one of those things that would be fun to see sometime. That and the Calgary Stampede, which is coming up very shortly. They're preparing for that too. I've always wanted to do that. Well, let's talk about getting more out of your ride. If you're like the rest of us, you're always looking for great deals on the gear you need, and that's why you have to check out State Line Tack's current promotions. Right now, they've got amazing savings on everything from riding apparel to stable supplies to health products. Don't miss out on these limited-time offers. Sometimes they're limited in size and color and that kind of thing, so you have to check often. Head on over to statelinetack.com. Come right now and check out current promotions to see all the sales that they have going on right now. And don't forget to use our coupon code HRN at checkout. That'll get you 30% off any order over $129 or more. Now, some items that are already discounted or have manufacturer restrictions don't get that. Just use the coupon code HRN in checkout, and it'll apply it to the things that do apply. So that's the best way to check, is just throw them in your shopping cart and see what the discounts are. So check them out today at statelinetack.com. Well, we're excited to have our first guest on today. It's Julia Alibrand from Saddle Fit for Life. You've heard us doing some of the commercials for Saddle Fit for Life, and we wanted to have her on today because one of the topics that comes up all the time in our auditor room, and I think comes up all the time in the horse world in general, is saddle fit. And, you know, unless you've had some training on it, you're just going by what your instructor has said or somebody that you know at the barn has said, and it's kind of hearsay. You don't know whether that's exactly right. So I think all of us are kind of, you know, we do some research, but, you know, we're not getting the full picture on saddle fit. So Julia, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Glenn.
So what, you know, what is going on in the saddle world today? I know there's been a lot of changes and things are always changing. And I know Saddle Fit for Life has been around, what, 25 years?
That's right.
So
yes.
You've seen a lot of changes too over the years.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like you said in the beginning, I think saddle fit is one of those topics in the equine industry that stirs up a lot of controversy, and a lot of people, you know, have an idea of what they believe constitute good fit, but it's really often, you know, based on what somebody else has said or what they've kind of, you know, thought to be true for a long time. But when it actually comes to really figuring out whether a saddle does or doesn't fit a horse, a lot of people are a little bit confused by the topic. And unfortunately, what we say all the time is you can call five fitters and get 10 different opinions. So it is a very frustrating kind of space for a lot of riders to try and navigate, and for a lot of equine professionals as well. And the reason it is the way that it is because the saddle fitting world is unfortunately largely unregulated. And what that means is that anyone can pretty much call themselves a saddle fitter. So you can have somebody who, you know, had a weekend course, or someone who went through rigorous training and has years of experience, and they both kind of offer the same type of service. So that makes it really, really tough for the consumer and, you know, the everyday rider and the horse owner who's trying to do right by their horse to figure out who to trust. So yeah, that's kind of the current situation in the equine industry. And to top that off, we also have a lack of regulation in the manufacturing side. So manufacturers, you know, don't have to adhere to any sort of standard when it comes to building saddles according to equine anatomy and biomechanics. So unfortunately, there are a lot of products on the market that are A, inadjustable, and B, just contradict equine anatomy already at the time that they were constructed. So those two kind of compounding on each other makes the topic of saddle fit just really complicated for people to figure out.
And it's not always that the cheapest saddles are the most ill-fitting either. I mean,
no, definitely not.
Right? I mean, any price point can be made well or not made well as far as the horse's anatomy is concerned.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we always think the more expensive they are, the better they're going to be for my horse, but that's not necessarily true, depending on your horse too. So what are the things that people should know about when it comes to saddle fit? Give us some examples.
So, yeah, absolutely. So I think what's really important to do as a horse owner and a rider is to start approaching saddle fit from the horse's perspective first. So developing an understanding of equine anatomy and biomechanics, understanding where on the horse's back the saddle can and cannot sit. So learning about those areas that we need to steer clear from, and understanding, you know, we call it the saddle support area, where the area is on the horse's back where they can safely bear weight, where we are not impinging or preventing movement, where we're not encouraging, you know, negative physical or behavioral responses through pressure points. So getting an understanding of where your horse's saddle support area is a really good starting point. And then once you have that understanding of the anatomy and the biomechanics and the context of saddle fit, you can then easily take your piece of equipment, no matter what type of saddle you have, you know, whether it's a Western saddle, an English saddle, or any other type of discipline that you might be participating in, you can take that saddle and you can place it on your horse's back, and you can quite easily start to see where perhaps some of those problem areas are. And if you understand the structures involved, you can then often correlate them to behavioral symptoms that your horse has been showing, physical symptoms maybe that you're experiencing when you're tacking up. You know, common things are girthiness, horses moving away from the saddle when you start, you know, tacking up and putting the saddle pad on. They kind of get a little bit uneasy and restless in the cross ties, or even when you're going to mount, you know, moving away from the mounting block. So starting to really connect those behavioral reactions and some of those physical responses that you might be seeing under saddle with pressure points that your saddle might be causing on their back. And yeah, ultimately, you know, the biggest piece of advice to horse owners is to always stop and listen. We always say behavior is communication. So really starting to listen to your horse and starting to ask some questions if something unusual starts to surface. And yeah, but definitely having a basic understanding of the anatomy in relation to saddle fit is a really good starting point to A, protect your horse, but also to be able to be more selective with your saddle fitting professional.
So what do you think is the most common thing that's wrong with somebody's saddle fit? What do you see the most often?
Mm-hmm. So length is a very common problem.
Oh, really?
So we want the saddle. Yes, it is. Hmm. So we always want the saddle to sit ahead of the horse's last thoracic rib. Beyond that rib are the transverse processes of the lumbar spine. I won't get into the specifics. I know we have a limited time frame here, but you want to make sure that your saddle is not extending beyond that last rib. And we unfortunately very often see saddles that extend beyond. And some of the problems that come along with a saddle that is too long is that a horse is going to hollow their back and it's going to kind of escape that pressure that is being placed on their lumbar spine. It's going to cause them to be unable to track up properly. Often horses have trouble with canter transitions, holding the lead, and just in general with, you know, going over the back and engaging the core. So that's one of the biggest things that we see, especially with modern breeding trends that are, you know, we're breeding more short coupled horses, more scopian athletic horses. And oftentimes, unfortunately, that means that we are sacrificing real estate when it comes to saddle fit. So definitely the number one issue. Another really common one is tree width. And it is important to note that we are talking about tree width and tree angle separately. We'll have some resources for you to kind of figure out what that means later on. But tree width is also a very common issue. So saddles that are too narrow.
I would have thought that would have been the most common, to be honest. You know,
yes, yeah, nice. Yeah. It's definitely up there with the length is the width and causing pressure on the thoracic trapezius and yeah, just preventing, you know, shoulder freedom. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we talk about the saddle in relation to the horse, but how many times have we seen the saddle not fitting the rider either? It's either too big and they got too much room, or it's too small and they're hanging out over the back, right? I mean, you see it all the time.
Yes. And I'm so glad that you're mentioning that, because saddle fit to rider is such an important piece of the puzzle as well. Most riders, when we, you know, we go to a saddle fitting, they say, I will ride in anything. I just want my horse to be comfortable. And that comes from a really nice place of caring deeply for your horse. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, because if you're sitting on your horse, if you're sitting in your saddle and you're not being supported, you know, properly by your equipment, you're bracing, you're compensating in some area, whether or not you're noticing it, or, you know, simply, like you said, the saddle is just too large for you and you're not sitting in the right place, your horse is going to feel that. And it's going to translate through your entire body, and it's going to affect the horse's movement and the horse's back health as well. So saddle fit to the horse is incredibly important, but so is the saddle fit to the rider. You know, we think of the saddle as the interface between horse and rider, and it really has to fit both equally in order for, you know, the entire picture of horse and rider moving in harmony to work together.
So how can saddle fit for life help the average person that has a saddle? And, mm-hmm. You know, can you guys help with that? Help them learn?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So Saddle Fit for Life is an organization that exclusively focuses on evidence-based saddle fit education. So as you mentioned, we've been around for many, many years. We've been teaching our curriculum officially since 2006, but our founder has been involved in the equine industry for much longer than that. And the curriculum was carefully developed over the years through collaboration with universities, with veterinarians, equine body workers, and human physicians. So it's a very in-depth, you know, evidence-based curriculum that we teach. And we have programs for horse owners and riders. We have lots of free resources on YouTube where for people to just come to and learn more about, you know, saddle fit to horse and rider and what they need to look for in their horses. And then we also have some professional courses if, you know, somebody is a body worker or a veterinarian or somebody who is looking to make a career out of working in the saddle fitting world. Courses that, you know, help them develop those skills, help them look at the horse holistically and really really apply a scientific method when it comes to saddle fit. We are particularly proud because our curriculum, our professional curriculum, was recently approved as a continuing professional development credit for veterinarians in Canada and in Germany. Oh, wow. We are working on approval, you know, worldwide, but it is really exciting that it sort of underscores the, you know, the quality of the training and how scientific everything is that we teach. And none of this is stuff that we came up with. It's all based on research that has been out there and knowledge that has been out there for many years. We just bring it together in a digestible curriculum. You know, whether you're a horse owner or an equine professional looking to learn more, definitely, you know, come check out Saddle Fit for Life, take a look at our website or YouTube, and we'd love to get in touch with you and help you learn more and how to become an advocate for your horse.
And, you know, there's something else, too, that I think that goes along with that by learning more is, you know, you may have a saddle fitter out even to help you get the saddle fit, you know, and then 3 years later, the horse changes. Saddle may need some adjustments. It doesn't stay the same forever. We want it to, because that means less hassle for us, but that's not true necessarily.
It would be so much easier if that were the case. But like you said, saddle fitting, it's an ongoing process.
How often do you recommend people really look at that?
Yeah, that is a tough question to answer, just because it does vary depending on the horse. But at the bare minimum, your horse's saddle should be evaluated once a year. And it's important to remember that horses, you know, change physically beyond physical maturity. So some horse owners say they want to invest in a saddle once the horse has reached physical maturity. And until then, we'll just, you know, ride in what is quote unquote good enough. But A, you don't want the horse's first experiences under saddle to be associated with discomfort and pain. And B, the horse is going to continue changing beyond that. There are so many different factors that have an effect on the three-dimensional shape of the horse's back, like your hoof angles, the horse's, you know, basic conformation, physical changes in terms of, you know, muscle growth, muscle atrophy, the way that the horse is housed. So our recommendation is that anytime there's any significant change in your horse's environment that is affecting, you know, their weight and their physical shape in terms of, you know, changes in terrain, if you're moving to a new barn, if you're changing their diet, if you're ramping up training before a busy competition season, if your horse has had some time off due to an injury, we always recommend that after a period like that, before you return to riding, or, you know, as you're moving into a busier show season, that you do check the fit of your saddle. So there are some horses we see, you know, 4 times annually, but at the bare minimum, it should be once a year.
Your website, saddlefitforlifeacademy.com, is there a place on there where people can find licensed saddle fitters?
Absolutely, yes. So right at the top, if you go ahead and visit our website, you'll see a tab that says find a CEE/CSE. And what those abbreviations stand for are Certified Equine Ergonomist and Certified Saddle Ergonomist. We specifically chose to call our graduates something other than saddle fitter, just because that term has become so ambiguous in this equine industry. So a Certified Equine Ergonomist is someone who has gone through our first level of education and is proficient in providing our in-depth 80-point saddle fit evaluation to objectively assess the fit of your saddle to you and your horse. They'll be able to produce measurements. They'll be able to perform a static and a dynamic assessment. So this is a really great starting point and someone who can definitely help you with that. If you're looking for a CSE, a Certified Saddle Ergonomist, that is someone who has taken their training one step beyond. They are able to already offer saddle fit adjustments as well. So if you have a saddle that is adjustable, if you're looking, you know, to find a new saddle, this would be a person who can complete the evaluation process with you, but also help you find a solution and make adjustments to an existing saddle.
And geez, if you're looking for a career in the horse world and are interested in saddles, get yourself over there and do the testing, do the courses, because like in Florida, there's one. I mean, Georgia, you know, there's none. There's gaps here for people to do this and make a career out of it.
Absolutely. Yes, we have so many horses who are ridden under saddle. And you know, very few qualified saddle fitters around the world, really. I mean, we have students all over the place, and I have conversations each and every day with people who are struggling in their respective areas and are looking for certified professionals. So we have a really great free trial of our program as well. You know, whether you're a horse owner or you're someone who's interested in doing this professionally or adding it to an existing equine business, definitely check out the free trial, see what we're all about. And yeah, we'd love to get in contact and have a conversation with you about how we can help you reach your goals and hopefully help some horses and make the saddle fitting world a better place and make riding more comfortable for horse and rider.
Julia, thanks for joining us. It's Saddle Fit, the number four life. You can check them out. We'll put the links in our show notes as well. We really do appreciate you being here and hopefully getting people thinking a little bit about getting their saddle fitted by somebody that's qualified.
Thank you so much, Glenn. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
As a horse owner, you know the joy of seeing your equine partner thrive, but travel, competition, and daily life can take a toll. That's why Poseidon Animal Health offers veterinarian-formulated supplements to support your horse's well-being. Stress Paste provides targeted support during times of acute stress, while Digestive HP is your daily gut health foundation, supporting the entire GI tract from stomach to hind gut. Trusted by vets and elite riders alike, Poseidon Animal Health puts your horse's health first. Discover the difference yourself at PoseidonAnimalHealth.com. This Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine, non-GMO core nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. And I am so excited to welcome back to the show Dr. Janice from Wilson College in Pennsylvania, but she's not in Pennsylvania right now. She is joining us lakeside in Iowa, and it just sounds so relaxing. I haven't seen water in like a year.
Yeah, she lives in New Mexico. It's not known for, you know, beachfront. Well, there's a lot of beach, yeah, but it's not on water.
No.
How's Iowa?
Iowa is great. Our friends told us we brought the hot weather, so we've been in the 90s, but they have a very nice boat, and we've been able to be out on the lake and enjoying some pretty nice breezes out here.
Oh, well, that sounds pretty.
That's the best. Really, I always say any day on a boat is a good day.
Right, it is.
Yeah. Unless it's your boat and you're paying for it, then somebody else's boat is a good day. It's like horses.
Exactly.
It's just one expensive hobby for another. Although I'm sure boats aren't always trying to find ways to kill themselves. So there is that. Dr. Janice, I'm so excited to have you with us today. And, you know, all this heat talk is the perfect segue. I want to focus on managing heat, water intake, and salt intake. And this is a very timely conversation. I know Jamie was talking about this earlier this week. There's been a lot of discussion in the auditor room. And so let's kick off. Given the varying climates that horses live in, what are some of the primary signs that you look for that indicate a horse is struggling with heat stress beyond a sweaty horse?
Well, I'm always really fond of doing routine hydration status checks. So doing the skin pinches, and not just across like the shoulder or neck where we usually do, but you can also do it above the eyelid or above the eye.
Really? I never heard that one.
Yeah. Well, like in old horses, sometimes the skin, you know, we don't like to talk about it from a human standpoint, but you know, in old horses, the skin sometimes gets a little saggy and doesn't respond as well. But above the eye, the skin's a little thinner, and it still will respond really well to a skin pinch.
I am kind of resembling that remark right now.
No. So, oh my gosh. So other things that I would do is I would check your horse's temperature, because they should, if they are well hydrated, should be able to thermoregulate and keep their body temperature down around that 99-101 level. So just like in humans, if we start to see the core body temperature getting elevated, it might be a sign the horse can't keep himself cool naturally. And then also sometimes in horses, if they are severely dehydrated, then they can't sweat. So if you think your horse should be sweating because of the temperature and he's not, then again, it becomes serious. Kind of, again, same thing with humans. They can do the, you know, same thing where we stop sweating, and that is a severe sign. We got to get the horse in, get him cooled down. call your vet.
Absolutely. And I know that's something I saw quite frequently living in Florida and riding in Florida with the heat. What are some of your strategies for encouraging water intake, especially in the summer? We're traveling, you know, we're on the trail, or when the horse might be reluctant to drink, maybe because they are so hot. Are there specific types of electrolytes or additives that you would recommend or advise against in these kinds of situations?
So, oh gosh, that's such a good question. And I always feel like horses always feel like we do the it depends response. So electrolytes can be great if your horse has sweat out a lot of the salts, because horses have what we say is hypertonic sweat, which means that it's higher in salt content than water content. So when we see like the white kind of crust form on our horses or that foam that we talk about, that is some of the salts that the horse is losing coming out in the sweat. So I really like for my horses to have access to salt at all times, because they're pretty good at regulating what they need on their own. And then ideally, if the horses are healthy, when they take in that salt, that will trigger them to drink more water.
It's like the peanuts at the bar trick, right?
Yeah.
Except at the bar, we're not drinking water. So, I mean, there's that. Different kind of intake.
I have to ask, does the salt type matter? I mean, I see on Facebook everybody going from a salt block to, you know, tablespoons of iodized salt into the feed. Is there an ideal way to get your horse salt, or is it just however they'll take it?
I would say it's however they would take it. Okay. And I was just at a conference the beginning of June with the Equine Science Society. And there's actually some recent research done on that I was able to sit in and listen to. So they had a group that had salt blocks and table like in granular salt, and they did not find a difference in salt intake. So, you know, we always hear that maybe horses don't like salt blocks or they can't lick them, but from their study, it really didn't matter. The horses took in what they needed, and they also didn't actually see a difference in if your salt block was Himalayan or red or white or yellow or whatever other colors you have out there. The horses still just ate the same amount of salt.
That's so interesting. But proving the fact you mentioned earlier that, you know, if the horse doesn't have any, let's say, outstanding health issues, they will take what they need.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
It really is.
It really is. I mean, and the variation in how much salt the horses took in was also pretty crazy. So, you know, we say that we think they need this much, like I think it's like we usually talk about like 2 tablespoons a day, but some horses take in more than that, some horses take in less than that. And yeah, and as long as they're, you know, performing and doing what you need them to do, they're probably way smarter than we are about what they need.
And are there any risks if the horse will, you know, like we've seen horses that'll just stand there and lick the salt block all day, for example? What are some of the risks in over supplementation, or what are things we should look out for in that situation?
That's an excellent question. So we do have horses that they'll eat the salt if they're bored. So if they're stopped and tired and there's nothing else, they might decide to chew on that. We also have horses that are called psychogenic salt eaters. And I always just love that term because it
makes them sound crazy. Like they're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's basically what it is. Like they just have a really, you know, they will just eat salt as long as it's present.
It's tough to bite your fingernails when you're a horse. So, I mean,
there you
gotta
go.
Do something.
I'd be impressed if they could do that. So those horses, if you have one that eats just excessive amounts of salt, then you would have to remove the salt block and kind of regulate what they take in. And always have fresh water available, because if the horses have water available and drink it, they will flush the extra salt out of their body. It'll make your stall pretty nasty, but they will pee it all out along with that extra water. If they don't, then we do have to worry about that we're going to throw off the electrolyte balance inside the body and can cause problems. with muscle function and system function.
What are some other proactive management strategies that you find to be the most effective in preventing heat-related illnesses during these hot, hot summer months?
Oh, there are so many things that we could try and do. So, it's crazy. Like, I always think about these poor animals, you know, they're basically wearing a fur coat at all times. So from a management standpoint, if we can get them to carry less body fat, so they're a little bit leaner on the body condition, they can thermoregulate better because they'll be able to get the blood vessels to the skin surface. And that's one of the ways that they cool themselves, is they push blood flow out to the skin. The air blows across their bodies, and that helps to cool the blood, and then it cools the body. So if they're a little bit, if they're carrying a little bit of extra fat cover, they can't do that as well. I also am a big fan, if you can figure out how to ride your horses, if you're working them in the cooler parts of the day, so earlier in the morning, late at night. I know in Texas, I had some friends here, they're like, yeah, we have to ride at 2 a.m. So that we're
That's dedication.
Bless America, my God.
Right? I'm like, that definitely changes your daily.
So, wow.
But yeah, you know, but it's, you know, it's 120 degrees or something. So they're not, they don't want to ride in that. And I like the idea of, if we can hose them off, and like, even, you know, if you're out on the trails, if you can in some way have a sponge, and if you're, you know, going by water sources and can dip the sponge and kind of squeeze that off over the horse while you're out, that will also help them. Because again, the skin will get wet, the wind will hit it, it'll help cool them. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen, I'm always amazed whenever I watch, in particular, endurance rides. You know, when those horses come into the vet checks, they just have buckets and buckets of water and just throw it on the horses to try and help cool them out before they go back out on the ride.
Yeah. So I think that's good for, you know, getting people started and at least thinking about what they have to do as far as salt's concerned. Was there anything else? You were at the Equine Science Society Summit. What was there one other thing that really stood out to you that you went, that's something I hadn't thought about, or, wow, that's cool research. Was there one thing that popped out?
Oh, gosh. There are so many things, Glenn. So, but let me see. I actually did mark a couple of the abstracts that I thought were pretty cool. So they did have a group that actually is out of Florida, and they were trying to do soaking of feed to try and increase water intake. And what I thought was kind of interesting was that they said that, like, initially it worked really well, but they said that they didn't think it actually, like, long-term increased overall water intake. So at some point, when the horses, even if you had the feed soaked, if they got to a point where they were well hydrated, they weren't going to take in more water just because it was in the feed. Like, they would just start drinking less. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Because, again, it goes a little bit against, as they said, like, cold weather, which we're not necessarily talking about, that could be a great way to get water into them. But that, you know, horses, again, they kind of regulate what they need.
Interesting. You know, yeah. Dr. Janice, the Equine Society, the Equine Science Society Summit, it sounds like a nightmare for a horse husband like me. I got to tell you. That's some deep stuff you get into there.
I mean, it is. It was pretty amazing. I'm part of the student competition committee. So we had 75 graduate and undergraduate students from around the world who presented work, and then had faculty and companies that presented their research as well. It meets every 2 years, and it's always a good learning environment.
Terrific. Was there one of the students, I hate to do this to you, you don't have to mention names, but was there one of their findings that you found, you know, that was very creative or interesting?
Yeah, there was a school that they actually were doing some work with, again, it relates to heat, but they were doing some work with having shelters out in paddocks, and whether or not the horses use them more in hot weather. And it was kind of interesting because, like, they had wet globe thermometers, and they basically had GPS tracking on these horses to figure out, you know, were they under the shelter, were they out in the open, and like correlated it with the weather and the temperature and the time of day. Like, it was, I was just amazed. I was like, wow, that's a lot of equipment to pull this work out. So that was pretty cool. Like, it has definitely changed since I was packing horses out in pastures, for sure.
You know, it's interesting because the horses never seem to be in the shelter when it's pouring and hailing. They're always standing outside, you know, and never under the roof, right? For some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. Like, that is so true.
And the other thing Ashley and I were talking about it before we started today, our horses, they each have a fan, you know, at the gate in their stall. And I'll tell you what, they become addicted to those fans. When they start to get warm, they come in and stand in front of that fan. If that fan isn't on, they get mad. I mean, they want that fan on. It's an addiction. Oh, yeah. It really is.
I mean, it really is. And I mean, and it really is. That is the main way that they thermoregulate, is getting, you know, yeah, getting blood to the skin and then standing in the breeze and cooling themselves off.
Well, and I think, too, it keeps the bugs off. That helps, too. You know,
that, yes, yeah. That is for sure.
Because the gnats this year in Florida have been, the gnats have been awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have big bugs in Florida.
Yeah, we have all the bugs. I just read that there's two really bad kinds of termites, and now they're crossbreeding to make what they're calling the extreme termite.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So apparently the extreme termite is resistant to all the termite treatments that we currently have, and they have to come up with a new termite treatment so they can charge you thousands of dollars to save your house. So
what you're saying is we need to get Florida. Into the termite business.
Gosh.
Welcome to Florida. You go enjoy the rest of your vacation out on the lake there. Dr. Janice from Wilson College, we really appreciate you stopping by like you do, and we always look forward to having you.
Yeah, enjoy doing it. Thank you guys so much.
Non-GMO whole food nutrition is the basis of the entire Daily Dose Equine program. We never forget that natural is better and simplicity is key. Our full line of specialty horse feeds is unique in the industry. We start with high-quality non-GMO grains that are flame-roasted for safety and better digestibility. And then we add non-GMO alfalfa, timothy, peas, sunflower seeds, and flax. Your horse will enjoy unsurpassed balanced core nutrition with elevated levels of vitamins, zinc, and copper, prebiotics, probiotics, and electrolytes in every mouthful. Find the perfect formulation for your horse at DailyDoseEquine.com. Select Daily Dose Equine formulations are available nationwide through Chewy.com and TractorSupply.com.
Well, normally this time of day, Jamie does the weird news, but she has all the weird news locked up in her email and I don't have it. So, and she's better at it anyway. So I thought, you know, with the world, with the country kind of, you know, being the way it is and the world, you know, self-imploding and all of that stuff, I thought we'd do some good news stories. And they're surprisingly hard to find. So I did look around and I found some. These have nothing to do with horses. So just like weird news, they don't have anything to do with horses. But I thought we could all use some good news. So here's a couple of short stories for you. The scientists have found a sugar that they think can help fight cancer. And guess where the sugar comes from? How they find these things, I have no idea. Sea cucumbers.
Oh my gosh.
Who took a sea cucumber and went, hey, if I extract the sugar from it, who knew that sea cucumbers had sugar? But if I extract the sugar from it, maybe it'll fight cancer. Who thought of that?
Well, especially sea cucumbers. As a diver myself, the way that they like defend themselves is it looks like they pee, like it stream shots.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, apparently they got past that and tested the sugars in a sea cucumber. Apparently it's been found to block some of the enzymes in overactive cancers. So they're going to continue studying it and seeing if they can find therapy out of it. So I don't know. Does that mean we're going to have sea cucumber farms? Maybe that's our next business, Ashley.
Oh.
Well, you know, we'll do a lake in the backyard and, you know, do sea cucumbers. Or
they're really gross. I need you to Google them first because
let me look it up, because I'm not a diver.
They're kind of gross They're kind of gross is the best I could say, because we're not in the Auditor
they're
Post
ugly.
Show. Yeah.
Oh, they look like giant slugs.
Yeah, they're
not
cute.
I've been dealing with the tomato slugs. I don't need those. Oh, God. Okay, I'm not doing a sea cucumber farm. We'll just cross that out. All right. A 16-year-old from Atlanta named Maya Rodriguez started baking custom cakes during the pandemic to earn extra money. What she started as a hobby has blossomed into a thriving business, and last week she announced she'd use a portion of her profits to fund, get this is how thriving her business is, 50 microgrants for other young, inspiring entrepreneurs in Atlanta.
I love this so much.
I mean, doesn't that give you goosebumps thinking about it?
I don't know about you, Glenn. Were you an entrepreneurial kid? Because I was.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and I've always been that kind of that
way. Oh my gosh. There was just the other day, a girl in my neighborhood had a sign and she was doing dog washes for $5.
Oh, there you go. That's, yeah. Did you get your
we
dog
love
wash?
Seeing it. I did not, but I did give her some cash just as we support business women in this home.
There you go. There you go. A 17-year-old from Seattle, Ethan Miller, won a prestigious national science fair last week for his groundbreaking innovation, a biodegradable packaging material made from all things, I got the bizarre ones today, mushroom roots.
Hmm.
You know, you don't think about a mushroom, actually. You don't think about the roots. You think about what's on top of the ground, but, you know, I guess
right.
They have roots, right? This his innovation, which he hopes can replace single-use plastics, has already been attracting interest from several sustainable packaging companies. So there, you know, it does seem like there's people out there that you hear about that invent engines, like that run on fumes of, you mm-hmm. know, that, you know, run on some bizarre thing. And then you never hear about them again because somebody buys up the patent and then, you know, never does anything with it.
Right.
They don't want it. So I don't know. Maybe this one will actually make it somewhere. I'm not sure.
I mean, I hope it does just from the amount of Amazon deliveries I get.
Yes.
That sure make me feel
too.
Better.
Me too. Sarah Jenkins, who is a visually impaired blind runner from Boston, achieved a lifelong dream last week by competing in the Berlin Marathon. That was the final race in the Grand Slam of the world's six major marathons. She's guided by a rotating team of friends and volunteers because nobody wants to run the whole thing with her. And so she has done the six marathons while being blind, and that's the Grand Slam in 1 year. So
that's incredible.
So good for her. And her support team, too, had to be there for her the whole time around the world, too. So that's kind of cool.
Golly, I don't think I like my friends enough, Glenn, to go on a run a marathon with.
Exactly.
I'll be real honest with you.
That's why they trade off, because, you know, I'd be good for about a mile. And then and I want the end mile that's slower than the beginning
yeah.
mile. So.
Well, and then you get all the clapping, you
yes.
know.
I did an interview yesterday on a panel for podcasting, and one of my friends has been he's been in podcasting longer than me, and he's 6'8". He's a big guy.
Jeez.
But he's my age, a super nice guy. And he said, you know, I went for my blood work. I got my blood work done, and, you know, it was all good. But I decided, and this was a good thing. He said, I decided I have to get healthier by 2 years for every year I live now because I'm 60, almost 65. And I thought, that's a good way to look at it. And then I thought, God, that requires a lot of work and effort. And then I threw it out. So
that sounds great in theory, but we will not be doing that.
He'll do it. I won't. It is good theory, though, isn't it?
It is. It makes sense because it's all compounding.
Yeah. He said his mother lived like 100 or something. So
I don't want to live that long.
You know, it's funny because, you know, and Lisa doesn't mind. She posts about this. She talks about it.
Oh, I saw. Yeah.
Her mother is 102, I think, and was in the hospital for pneumonia. And, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully we'll get out this week. But she said yesterday, she said her mother was whining because she goes to racetrack all the time. She bets on the races all the time. And she was really
amazing.
Pissed that she was going to miss the races this week because she was in the hospital for pneumonia. That's how with it she is at 102.
That's awesome.
Final story, Emily Carter, a 14-year-old from a small town in Ohio, completed a year-long fundraising campaign last week. She raised $25,000 to provide two service dogs for military veterans. She did all kinds of things. She did bake sales, car washes. She sponsored a run to reach her goal. And this was all to be able to buy the two dogs for trained dogs for veterans with PTSD. So good for Emily. You know,
thanks, Emily. That's so sweet.
And look at this. We had a lot of teenagers doing good things. You know, we all say,
thank God.
You know, teenagers today, we all use that
right.
line. But here's
right.
some doing good stuff. So there's your good news for the week. I hope it offsets some of the really crappy news you've been watching on TV. You come here to escape all of that. That's what we do here. We don't talk about that stuff. We give you a place to get away from it for at least an hour every day. Thank you, Ashley, for filling in. Appreciate it. There'll be no Auditor Post show today because I have other event or other shows to do today. It's a busy week for Ashley and I, so we're going to get to that. Jamie will be back on Friday, and tomorrow we have the Equine Affair episode for you. We had a lot of fun talking about that. I got a tease tomorrow at the beginning of the show. Allison's going to talk about this unique place that she went in Tennessee.
I saw this.
Oh my God, it's incredible. It's such a fantasy.
I saw this.
I want to go with Jennifer just to see it. It looks incredible. The guy must have spent millions on this thing. And she said it was incredible. So we'll talk about that at the beginning of tomorrow's Equine Affair episode. Ashley, give a plug for your shows.
Oh gosh, how many of them are there? Well, you guys will you just heard the Quarter Horse episode, which was yesterday, and thanks for listening there. And of course, you can find me at least until you fall asleep over on Sleep Stories for Equestrians.
Are you still
in a book right now? I just recorded the next episode of Elf, and like I had mentioned before, it's like Black Beauty, but with none of the terrible parts. It's just this darling little horse story in old England.
So do you get sleepy reading the books?
I don't, but I have to record them in the morning when I have a lot of energy. Because I have to like turn my energy down, but I can't get sleepy. So it's a little bit of a psycho trick for me.
I know. I know you so well now. And when I hear you, when I listen in, when I tune in to hear what you're up to over there, it's like a completely different person.
It totally is. My friends are like, "That's not you." And I'm like, "I promise that it's me."
Like my friend Katie from Women's Meditation Network. And I listen to her. It creeps me out because she's this high energy, businesswoman. And I know. And I listen to her over there. It's like this. I couldn't even do the meditation voice that she has. Oh my God. That's a talent. So Sleep Stories for Equestrians. You'll find that on any podcast player. If you need help going to sleep, Ashley will put you to sleep every single night. And you do. There's a lot of people that you put to sleep.
Yeah, there's a bunch. I was thinking about it the other night. I'm like, if I think about this too much, it's kind of creepy. I'm just like spiritually tucking all these little horse people into bed.
Okay, that's kind of creepy.
I'm like Santa.
Now, can you listen to it yourself to fall asleep? Or are you critical of listening to yourself?
I can't.
I couldn't do it either. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Mm.
Yeah, I don't want to listen to myself falling asleep. That's extra creepy.
I think that would be narcissistic. Yeah.
BetterHelp. BetterHelp would be the advertiser for that particular.
For sure.
Speaking of which, can you get them as an advertiser?
I know.
Because I think horse people need them more than anybody.
I've thought about this so often recently. Yeah. We're all crazy.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. BetterHelp would be the perfect advertiser for us.
I think so too. They just don't know.
Yeah. They advertise on every other podcast in the world.
I know. I need to seriously pitch them.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.